Oldie Lunch Recordings presents Robert Douglas Fairhurst on the story of Alice, Lewis Carroll and the secret history of Wonderland. Sponsored by Doro, number one in the senior mobile market.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's good to see you here. It's good of you to invite me here. I'm now preparing for the technology to break down, which means I can do the old microphone. It's a trick. Picture yourself on a boat on a river. Remember what the Dormouse said? Feed your head. Feed your head. Also, I am the Eggman. You are the Eggmen. I am the Walrus. Goo 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 joob. And if you're starting to hum along in your heads, that might be because these little musical fragments do more than draw on our private memories. They tap our collective memory. They remind us that over the last 150 years, a story about growing up has itself developed in strange and surprising ways. And what started off as an attempt to entertain three little girls in Victorian Oxford has become an important part of the story we tell about ourselves. In 1990, the New York Times published an article under the headline, "That Girl Is Everywhere." And it was about Alice. And since then, she's become even harder to pin down. If literary characters can be national treasures, then Alice definitely qualifies. According to the poet Robert Graves, she is, he said, the prime heroine of our nation. She is like a little champion of British common sense in a bizarre and baffling world. But if she's a national treasure, she's also an international treasure. You might think about the dozens of translations that go from Afrikaans to Zulu via Hawaiian and Cornish and Manx. Or maybe Disneyland's teacup ride, or that huge bronze statue of Alice in New York's Central Park. Or there's a whole restaurant in Tokyo which serves caterpillar sushi rolls, mock turtle salads. In London, there's a new office building just opened, which includes a giant fiberglass white rabbit in the corridor and the Queen of Hearts boardroom. I don't know about you, I'd be quite worried if I were invited to the Queen of Hearts boardroom. If you put all these examples together, you quickly realise that this is much more than just a literary character. No, she's become something more like an escapologist. Every time we think we've managed to pin her down, she wriggles free. And on her 150th birthday, she's still on the loose. So, why am I interested in her? Why am I interested? It's not as if I have a secret wardrobe full of long blonde wigs and blue pinafore dresses. Some of you clearly do. I don't. I'm not judging you. But I don't. I don't have one of those slightly disturbing tattoos you can see online. There's one I've seen which includes scenes from the 1951 Disney cartoon on someone's back underneath the caption, "Ink me." It's a really bad joke, but it is a very good tattoo. There's someone else who's got a Cheshire cat bursting out from their chest cavity like an outtake from Alien. I don't have one of those either. There is one confession I can share with you today, and that is that when I was about 7 or 8 years old, the school bully accused me of being a bookworm. Imagine, a bookworm. As an insult, it backfired slightly because I didn't know what he meant, and the only way to find out was to go and read a little bit more. But even now, I think the bully got it the wrong way around. It's not that we burrow our way into books. No, books burrow their way into us. They change how we think and how we feel. And any book can do that. It's the books that we read as children that really stick. Some of you might know of the children's author Catherine Rundle, and she puts this much better than I can in her recent story, Rooftoppers. In Rooftoppers, she says, books crowbar the world open for you when you're a child. It's a lovely phrase, that. Books crowbar the world open for you. Then the world can remain a place that's full of possibility and surprise. And in my case, yes, the book was Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. Some of you will remember that original illustration by John Tenniel that shows Alice pulling apart the curtain that reveals the door into Wonderland. Do you remember that? And that also sums up my earliest memory of the story, which is also my earliest memory of reading. And just as Carol's story reminds us that Wonderland is not a place, it's a state of mind, so his story also introduced me to that power of the imagination to transform the world. Wonderland, for me, was the world of books. So, the obvious question then is, how? How did such a little book come to have such a large presence in our culture? And who is this Alice, anyway? Who is Alice? Well, that's what I talk about in my book. It looks at the development of Wonderland as an idea. It looks at Lewis Carroll's, or Charles Dodgson's, life. It looks at the life of the real Alice, Alice Liddell, the little girl for whom he told the story. But the final question is why anyone would still want to read the book. It was published 150 years ago. Why would anyone want to read about Alice when there are so many modern characters to choose from? And why would you want to go back to Wonderland when you could instead go to Oz or Discworld or, not you, but others, Narnia? And the simple answer is that when we read about Alice, we're really reading about ourselves. What I mean by that is that although when he wrote his sequel in 1871, he would send Alice through a looking glass, over the last 150 years, Alice herself has become something like a looking glass. She's like those funfair mirrors that you put yourself in front of that reflect distorted versions of yourself. Wonderland has been used to think about everything from the suffragette movement to the effect of LSD. It's expanded its borders. Life, the unconscious, the scientific world. There's an East End theatre I discovered that was called Wonderland, which in the 1890s included the armless midget lady. You know, these have all been described as various kinds of Wonderland. More recently, psychologists describe a cognitive disorder known as Alice in Wonderland syndrome. Neuroscientists sometimes use Jabberwocky sentences that show that different bits of the brain are used to process meaning and grammar. And at a personal level too, Wonderland retains its power to tease and to unsettle what we normally take for granted. And all of you have this experience every day, because these days we all carry a little rabbit hole around with us in our pockets. Yes? It allows us to disappear into a modern Wonderland where you can be anything you want to be. WWW Underland. Yes? That's the new rabbit hole. It's also the premise of a new musical by Damon Albarn, which is coming to the National Theatre in November, Wonder.land, as he calls it. One of the things I do talk about in the book is how Lewis Carroll was obsessed with twins and with doubles. So puns and portmanteau words and photographs which allow you to turn the world upside down and inside out. And the most obvious example of that is the fact that Alice herself is double. It's not just that there are two Alice books. The first book, too, is two books in one. For child readers, it's a way of coming to terms with the grown-up world, a place that is strange and often alarming and full of confusing, arbitrary rules about grammar, amongst other things. But is also sometimes a place of fun and jokes. That's the children's version. What about adults? What about for us? Well, for adult readers, opening the cover of the book is a bit like stepping inside a personal TARDIS and being transported back in time. Virginia Woolf put this much better than I can. She said that although the Alice books are written for children, they're also the only books in which you become children. In other words, once you've opened that door to Wonderland by opening the book, you know where it is. And all you have to do then is to make yourself small enough again to squeeze through it.
The Oldie Magazine Recordings. This is a Radio Gorgeous production for The Oldie 2015.